Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this hour of the Kids Zone here on the Radio Reading Service. This is Mark Wiesner, and again, this week I'm flying solo without my wife, Jan. She'll be back next week. But we're in the midst of a book that's, I guess, might be considered historical fiction. The title of the book is called Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry. It's a novel written by Mildred D. Taylor. It's a Newbery Honor Book winner. It's about a story about takes place in the 1930s in the United States. It's down in the South. It's in particular the state of Mississippi. It's post-Civil War, and the story is about a liberated black family. Known as the Logans, and there are four children in the family. Are the main storyteller in the book is a young girl named Cassie. She's the oldest, and she has three brothers, and their names are Little Man, Stacy, and Christopher John. And obviously, they are dealing with the times of the Knight Riders and a lot of efforts on the part of the Ku Klux Klan that are starting up. And matter of fact, where we left off in the story last week was that their mother has taken them into a nearby town to go shopping, or to go pick up some things from the store. And the mother had a chance to drop something off at, or to have a discussion with an attorney or a lawyer there who works there. His name is Mr. Jameson. And this Mr. Jameson has been working very, very hard to purchase something that they own. And the Logan family, which sets them apart from many of the other families, African-American families, is that they own their own land, which is extremely significant. They're not sharecropping. They're not, you know, toiling on the land for a meager amount of money or whatever the case may be, because they have to give a portion of it back to the person who owns the land. No, they own their own land. And this Mr. Jameson is forever working on them to try to sell this property. Well, while they're in this town, the mother, Ma, is having some type of conversation, or she stops in at this Mr. Jameson's office. And that leaves the children on their own to go. In particular, they go to a store with the intent of buying the things that their mom might need or does need. It's on a list. However, they are confronted with some racial bigotry. And it's something that they're having great difficulties trying to reconcile and to deal with. And in particular, Cassie, who is our storyteller here, is having a special difficulty dealing with. So when we enter back into the story, she's confronting, or having had, a confrontation with a young girl, a white girl named Lillian Jean, who is basically bossing her around, bossing Cassie around, because of the fact that she's simply black and that she is walking on the sidewalk in front of her, and she shouldn't do that. She should be moving, stepping aside, which is something that Cassie doesn't quite understand. So also, this book many a times will use language that is I find, quite honestly, difficult to kind of speak. They'll use the N-word and making reference to in conversation with some of the racially bigoted kind of remarks. And I generally will not use that word. I will, when I'm reading, I will refer to them as black children or whatever the case may be. And so that is to kind of temper the response. So let us begin. Mr. Sims glared down at me. "When my gal, Lillian Jean, says you to get yourself off the sidewalk, you get off, you hear?" Behind him were his sons, R.W. and Melvin. People from the store began to ring the Sims. "Ain't that the same little black girl who was cutting up back there at Jim Lee's?" somebody asked. "Yeah, she's the one," answered Mr. Sims. "You hear me talking to you, gal? You apologize to Miss Lillian Jean this minute." I stared up at Mr. Sims, frightened. Jeremy appeared frightened too. "I apologized already." Jeremy seemed relieved that I had spoken. "She did, Pa. Right now, 'fore y'all come, she did." Mr. Sims turned an angry gaze upon his son, and Jeremy faltered, looked at me, and hung his head. Then Mr. Sims jumped into the street. I moved away from him, trying to get up. He was a mean-looking man, red in the face and bearded. I was afraid he was going to hit me before I could get to my feet, but he didn't. I scrambled up and ran blindly for the wagon. Someone grabbed me, and I fought wildly, attempting to pull loose. "Stop, Cassie," Big Moll said. "Stop. It's me. We're going home now." "Not before she apologizes to my gal, she ain't," said Mr. Sims. Big Ma gazed down at me, fear in her eyes, then back at the growing crowd. "She's just a child." "Tell her, auntie." Big Ma looked at me again, her voice cracking as she spoke. "Go on, child. Apologize." But Big Ma," her voice hardened, "do like I say." I swallowed hard. "Go on." "I'm sorry," I mumbled. "I'm sorry, Miss Lillian Jean," demanded Mr. Sims. "Big Ma," I balked. "Say it, child." A painful tear slid down my cheek, and my lips trembled. "I'm sorry, Ms. Lillian Jean." When my words had been spoken, I turned, and I fled, crying into the back of the wagon. No day in all my life had ever been as cruel as this one. Chapter 6. The ride home was long and silent. None of us felt like talking, not even TJ. Big Maw had informed me him shortly after leaving Strawberry, Mississippi, that she did not want to hear another word out of him before we reached home. He sulked for a while, with a few audible grumbles which no one paid any attention to, but finally he fell asleep and did not awaken until we had driven up the Granger Road and stopped in front of the Avery house. By the time Jack pulled into our own yard, the night was a thick blackness and smelled of a coming rain. Big Maw climbed wearily down from the wagon and went into the house without a word. I stayed with Stacy to help him put the wagon inside the barn and unhitch and feed Jack. While I held the flashlight on the barn doors, Stacy slowly slid aside the plank of wood that held the doors fastened. "Cassie," he said in a quiet, thoughtful voice, "don't go blaming Big Ma for what she done." "Why not?" I asked angrily. "She made me apologize to that old, ugly Lillian Jean about something wasn't even my fault. She took them old Sims' side without even hearing mine." Well, maybe she couldn't help it, Cassie. Maybe she had to do it. Had to do it? She didn't have to do nothing. She's grown just like that Mr. Sims, and she should have stood up for me. I would have done that for her that way. Stacy put the plank on the ground and leaned against the barn. "There's things that you don't understand, Cassie." "And I suppose you do, huh? Ever since you went down into Louisiana to get Papa last summer, you think you know so doggone much? Well, I bet you I know one thing. If that had been Papa, he wouldn't have made me apologize. He would have listened to me." Stacy sighed and swung open the barn doors. "Well, Papa, that's different. But Big Ma ain't Papa, and you can't expect..." His voice trailed off as he peered into the barn. Suddenly, he cried, "Cassie, give me that flashlight." Then, before I could object, he tore the flashlight from my hand and shone it into the barn. "What's Mr. Granger's car doing in our barn?" I explained as a silver Packard was unveiled by the light. Without answering me, Stacy swiftly turned and ran towards the house. I followed closely behind, throwing open the door to Mama's room. We stood dumbfounded in the doorway. Instead of Mr. Granger, a tall, handsome man, nattily dressed in a gray pinstripe suit and vest, stood by the fire with his arms around Big Ma. For a moment, we swayed with excitement. Then, as if by signal, we both cried, "Uncle Hammer!" and dashed into his arms. Uncle Hammer was 2 years older than Papa, and unmarried, and he came every winter to spend the Christmas season with us. Like Papa, he had dark, red-brown skin, a square jaw, face, and high cheekbones. Yet there was a great difference between them now, somehow. His eyes, which showed a great warmth as he hugged and kissed us now, often had a cold, distant glaze. And there was an aloofness to him, which the boys and I could never quite bridge. When he let us go, both grew consciously shy, and we backed away. I sat down beside Christopher John and Little Man, who were silently gazing up at Uncle Hammer, but Stacy stammered, "What's Mr. Granger's car doing in our barn?" "That's your Uncle Hammer's car," Mama said. "Did you unhitch Jack?" "Uncle Hammer's?" Stacy exclaimed, exchanging shocking glances with me. "No kidding?" Big Ma stammered. "Hammer, you went and got a car like Harlan Granger's?" Uncle Hammer smiled a strange, wry smile. "Well, not exactly like it, Mama. Mine's a few months newer. Last year when I come down here, I was right impressed with that big old Packard of Mr. Harlan Fillmore Granger's, and I thought I'd like to own one myself. It seems that me and Harlan Granger just got the same taste." He winked slyly at Stacy. "Don't it, Stacy?" Stacy grinned. "You like, maybe we all go riding in it one day if it's all right with your mama." "Oh boy," cried Little Man. "You mean it, Uncle Hammer?" I asked. "Mama, can we?" "We'll see," Mama said. Well, in any case, not tonight. Stacy, go take care of Jack and draw up a bucket of water for the kitchen. We've done the other chores. Since no one told me to help Stacy, I forgot all about Jack and settled back to listen to Uncle Hammer. Christopher, John, and Little Man, who Big Ma had feared would be moping because they had not been allowed to go to town, seemed not at all concerned that Stacy and I had gone. They were awestruck by Uncle Hammer, and compared to his arrival a day in Strawberry was a minor matter. For a while, Uncle Hammer talked only to Mama and Big Ma, laughing from deep down inside himself like Papa. But then, to my surprise, he turned from them and addressed me. I understand you had your first trip to Strawberry today, Cassie, he said. What did you think? Big Ma stiffened, but I was pleased to have this opportunity to air my side of the Strawberry affair. I didn't like it, I said. Them old Sims, Mary. I feel a little bit hungry, Big Ma interrupted abruptly. Supper still warm? Yes, ma'am, said Mama, standing. I'll set it on the table for you. As Mama stood up, I started again. Them old Sims, let Cassie get it, Mary, said Big Ma nervously. You must be tired. I looked strangely at Big Ma, then up at Mama. Oh, I don't mind, said Mama, heading for the kitchen. Go ahead, Cassie, and tell your uncle about Strawberry. That old Lillian Jean Sims made me so mad I could just spit. I admit that I bumped into her, but that was 'cause I was thinking about that old Mr. Barnett waiting on everybody else in his old store before he waited on us. Jim Lee Barnett? Asked Mr. Uncle Hammer, turning towards Big Ma. That old devil still living? Big Ma nodded mutely, and I went on. But I told him he shouldn't have been around there waiting on everybody else before he got to us. Cassie, Big Ma explained, hearing this bit of news for the first time. Uncle Hammer laughed. You told him that? Yes, sir, I said softly, wondering why he was laughing. Oh, that's great. Then what happened? Well, Stacy made me leave, and Mr. Barnett told me I couldn't come back no more, and then I bumped into that confounded Lillian Jean, and she tried to make me get off the sidewalk, and then her daddy come along, and he... Big Ma's eyes grew large, and she whispered hoarsely, Cassie, I don't think. And he twisted my arm and knocked me off the sidewalk. I exclaimed, unwilling to muffle what Mr. Sims had done. I glanced triumphantly at Big Ma, but she wasn't looking at me. Her eyes, frightened and nervous, were on Uncle Hammer. I turned and looked at him, too. His dark eyes had narrowed to thin, angry slits. He said, "He knocked you off the sidewalk, Cassie? A grown man knocked you off the sidewalk?" Yes, sir. This Lillian Jean Sims, her daddy wouldn't be Charlie Sims, would it? Yes, sir. Uncle Hammer grasped my shoulder. What else he do to you? Nothing, I said, frightened by his eyes, excepting he wanted me to apologize to Lillian Jean 'cause I wouldn't get in the row when she told me to. And you did? Big Ma said I had to. Uncle Hammer released me and sat very still. No one said a word. Then he stood slowly, his eyes icing into that cold, distant way they could. And he started towards the door, limping slightly on his left leg. Christopher John, Little Man, and I stared after him wonderingly, but Big Moll jumped up from her chair, knocking it over in her haste, and dashed after him. She grabbed his arm. "Let it be, son," she cried. "That child ain't hurt."
"Not hurt?
You look into her eyes and tell me she ain't hurt." Mama came back from the kitchen with Stacy behind her.
"What is it?"
she asked, looking from Big Ma to Uncle Hammer. "Charlie Sims knocked Cassie off the sidewalk in Strawberry, and the child just told Hammer," said Big Ma in one breath, still holding on to Uncle Hammer's arm.
"Oh, Lord," Mama groaned.
"Stacy, get Mr. Morrison. Quick, now." As Stacy sped from the room, Mama's eyes darted to the shotgun over the bed, and she edged between it and Uncle Hammer. Uncle Hammer was watching her, and he said quietly, "Don't worry. I ain't gonna use David's gun. I got my own." Suddenly, Mama lunged to the side door, blocking it with her slender body. "Hammer, now you listen to me." But Uncle Hammer gently but firmly pushed her to one side, and brushing Big Ma from his arm, opened the door and bounded down the steps into the light rain. Little Man, Christopher John, and I dashed to the door as Big Ma and Mama ran after him. "Get back inside," Mama called over her shoulder, but she was too busy trying to grab Uncle Hammer to see to it that we obeyed and we did not move. "Hammer, Cassie's all right," she cried. "Don't go making unnecessary trouble."
"Unnecessary trouble? You think my brother died and I got my leg half blown off in their German war to have some redneck knock Cassie around any time it suits him? If I had knocked his girl down, you know what would have happened to me. Yeah, you know, all right. Right now I'll be hanging from that oak over yonder. Let go of me, Mary."
Mama and Big Ma could not keep him from reaching the car. But just as the Packard roared to life, a huge figure loomed from the darkness and jumped into the other side. And the car zoomed angrily down the drive into the blackness of the Mississippi night.
"Where'd he go?"
I asked as Mama slowly climbed the steps. Her face under the glow of the lamp was tired, drained. "He went up to the Simses, didn't he? Didn't he, Mama?"
"He's not going anywhere," Mama said, stepping aside and waiting until both Big Ma and Stacy were inside. Then she locked the door.
"Mr. Morrison will bring him back," said Christopher John confidently, although he looked somewhat bewildered by all that had happened.
"If he don't," said Little Man ominously,
"I bet you Uncle Hammer will teach that old Mr. Sims a thing or two round here, hitting on Cassie."
"I hope he knocks his block off," I said.
Mama's gaze blazed down upon us. "I think little mouths that have so much to say must be very tired."
"No, ma'am, Mama, we ain't.
Go to bed."
"Mama ain't, but..."
Mama's face is hardened, and I knew it would be in my best interest to argue no further. I turned and did as I was told. Christopher John and Little Man did the same. When I got to my door, I asked, "Ain't Stacy coming?" Mama glanced down at Stacy sitting by the fire. "I don't recall his mouth working so hard, do you?"
"No, ma'am,"
I muttered, and went into my room. After a few minutes, Mama came in. Without a word of reprimand, she picked up my clothes from where I had tossed them at the foot of the bed, and absently draping them over the back of the chair, she said, "Stacy tells me you blame Big Ma for what happened today." Is that right? I thought over her question and answered, not for all of it. Just for making me apologize to that old dumb Lillian Jean Sims. You oughtn't have done that, Mama. Papa wouldn't have. I don't want to hear what Papa would have done, wouldn't have done, Mama snapped. Or what Mr. Morrison wouldn't have done, or Uncle Hammer. You were with Big Ma, and she did what she had to do, and believe me, young lady, you didn't like doing it one bit more than you did. Well, I muttered, maybe so, but there's no maybe to it. Yes, ma'am, I said softly, deciding that it was better to study the patchwork pattern on the quilt until the anger left Mama's eyes, and I could talk to her again. After a moment, she sat beside me on the bed and raised my chin with the tip of her forefinger. Big Ma didn't want you to be hurt, she said. That was the only thing on her mind, making sure Mr. Sims didn't hurt you. Yes, ma'am, I murmured, then flared. But Mama, that Lillian Jean ain't got the brains of a flea. How come I gotta go around calling her Ms., like she's grown or something? Mama's voice grew hard. Because that's the way of things, Cassie. The way of what things? I asked wearily. Baby, you have to grow up a little today. I wish, well, no matter what I wish, it happened. And you have to accept the fact that in the world outside this house, things are not always as we would have them to be. But Mama, it ain't fair. I didn't do nothing to that confounded Lillian Jean. How come Mr. Sims went and pushed me like he did? Mama's eyes looked deeply into mine, locked into them, and she said in a tight, clear voice, because he thinks Lillian Jean is better than you, Cassie. And when you, that old scrawny chicken leg, snaggle tooth, Cassie. Mama did not raise her voice, but the quiet force of my name silenced me. Now, she said, folding my hand in hers, I didn't say that Lillian Jean is better than you. I said Mr. Sims only thinks she is. In fact, he thinks she's better than Stacy, or Little Man, or Christopher John, just 'cause she's his daughter? I asked, beginning to think Mr. Sims was a bitch touched in the head. No, baby, because she's white. Mama's hold tightened on mine, but I explained, ah, shoot, white ain't nothing. Mama's grip did not lessen. It is something, Cassie. White is something just like black is something. Everybody born on this earth is something, and nobody, no matter what color, is better than anybody else. Then how come Mr. Sims don't know that? Because he's one of those people who has to believe that white people are better than black people to make himself feel big. I stared questioningly at Mama, not really understanding. Mama squeezed my hand and explained further. You see, Cassie, many years ago, when our people were first brought from Africa in chains to work as slaves in this country, like Big Ma's Papa and Mama? Ma nodded, yes, baby, like Papa Luke and Mama Rachel. Except they were born right here in Mississippi, but their grandparents were born in Africa, and when they came there were some white people who thought that it was wrong for any people to be slaves. So the people who needed slaves to work in their fields and the people who were making money bringing slaves from Africa preached that black people weren't really people like white people were. So slavery was all right.
They also said that slavery was good for us because it taught us to be good Christians, like the white people. She sighed deeply, her voice fading into a distant whisper. But they didn't teach us Christianity to save our souls, but to teach us obedience. They were afraid of slave revolts, and they wanted us to learn the Bible's teaching about slaves being loyal to their masters. But even teaching us Christianity didn't make us stop wanting to be free. And many slaves ran away. Papa Luke ran away, I reminded her, thinking of the story of how great-grandpa had run away 3 times. He had been caught, punished for his disobedience, but his owners had not tried to break him, for he had had a knowledge of herbs and cures. He attended both slaves and the animals of the plantation, and it was from him that Big Ma had learned medicines. Mama nodded again. That's right, honey. He was hiding in a cave when freedom came, so I understand. She was silent for a moment, then went on. Well, after a while, slavery became so profitable to people who had slaves, and even to those who didn't, that most folks decided to believe that black people really weren't people like everybody else. And when the Civil War was fought, Mama Rachel and Papa Luke and all the other slaves were freed, people continued to think that way. Even the Northerners who fought the war didn't really see us equal to white people. So now, even though 70 years have passed since slavery, most white people still think of us as they did then, that we're not as good as they are. And people like Mr. Sims hold on to that belief harder than some other folks because they have little else to hold on to. For him to believe that he is better than we are makes him think that he's important, simply because he's white. Mama relaxed her grip. I knew that she was waiting for me to speak. There was a sinking feeling in my stomach, and I felt as if the world had turned itself upside down with me in it. Then I thought of Lillian Jean, and a surging anger gurgled upward, and I retaliated. Well, they ain't. And I leaned closer to Mama, anxiously hoping that she would agree with me. Of course they aren't. Mama said, white people may demand our respect, but what we give them is not respect, but fear. What we give to our own people is far more important because it's given freely. Now, you may have to call Lillian Jean Miss because the white people say so, but you also call our own young ladies at church Miss. Because you really do respect them. Baby, we have no choice of what color we're born, or who our parents are, or whether we're rich or poor. What we do have is some choice over what we make of our lives once we're here. Mama cupped my face in her hands, and I pray to God you'll make the best of yours. She hugged me warmly then and motioned me under the covers. As she turned the lamp down low, I asked, Mama, Uncle Hammer, if Mr. Morrison can't stop him, what'll happen? Mr. Morrison will bring him back. But what if he can't? And Uncle Hammer gets to Mr. Sims. A shadowy fear fleeted across her face, but disappeared with the dimming light. I think you've done enough growing up for one day, Cassie, she said without answering my question. Uncle Hammer will be all right.
Now you just go to sleep. Mama had been right about Uncle Hammer. When I awoke the next morning and followed the smell of frying ham and baking biscuits in the kitchen, there he sat at the table drinking coffee with Mr. Morrison. He was unshaven and looked a bit bleary-eyed, but he was all right. I wondered if Mr. Sims looked so good. I didn't get a chance to ask, because as soon as I had said good morning, Mama called me into her room, where a tub of hot water was waiting by the fireplace. "Hurry up," she said. "Uncle Hammer is going to take us to church." "In his car?" Mama brow for, "Well, I just don't know. He did say something about hitching up Jack." My smile faded, but then I caught the teasing glint in her eyes, and she began to laugh. "Oh, Mama," I laughed and splashed into the water. After my bath, I went into my room to dress. When I rejoined Mama, she was combing her hair, which fanned her head like an enormous black halo. As I watched, she shaped the long thickness into a large chignon at the nape of her neck and stuck 6 sturdy hairpins into it. Then, giving the chignon, and that's spelled C-H-I-G-N-O-N, a word that I'm not familiar with, a pat, she reached for her pale blue cotton dress, sprinkled with tiny yellow and white flowers and polished white buttons running from top to bottom along its front. She glanced down at me. "You didn't comb your hair." "No, ma'am." "I want you to fix me up my grown-up hairdo." Mama began buttoning the top of her dress with long flying fingers, and I slowly fastened the lower buttons. I loved to help Mama get dressed. She always smelled of sunshine and soap. When the last button had slipped into place, she buckled a dark blue patent leather belt around her tiny waist and stood ready except for her shoes. She looked very pretty. "Where's your brush?" "Right here," I said, picking up the brush from where I had laid it on the chair. Mama sat down in Papa's rocker, and I sat on the deerskin rug in front of her. Mama divided my hair from ear to ear into 2 sections and braided the front section to one side and the back section right in the center. Then she wound each braid into a flat chignon against my head. My hair was too thick and long for me to do it well myself, but Mama could do it perfectly. I figured I'd look my very best that way. When Mama finished, I ran to the mirror, then turned facing her with a grin. She grinned back and shook her head at my vanity. "One day, Mama, you gonna fix my hair like yours?" "That'll be a few years yet," she answered. Readying the cardboard lining she had placed in her shoes, the cardboard lining she had placed in her shoes to protect her feet from the dirt and gravel, which could easily seep through the large holes in the soles, she set the shoes on the floor and stepped into them. Now with the soles facing downward and Mama's feet in them, no one could tell what the shiny exterior hid. Yet I felt uncomfortable for Mama and wished that we had enough money for her to have her shoes fixed, or better still, buy new ones. After breakfast, Stacy, Christopher John, Little Man, and I sat impatiently by the dying morning fire waiting for Mama, Big Ma, and Uncle Hammer. Uncle Hammer was dressing in the boys' room, and Mama was in with Big Ma. I checked to make sure that none of them was about to reappear, then leaned towards Stacy and whispered, "You think Uncle Hammer whipped Mr. Sims?" "No," said Stacy quietly. "No," cried Little Man. "You don't mean Mr. Sims whipped Uncle Hammer?" stammered an unbelieving Christopher John. "Nothing happened," said Stacy, in explanation as he tugged irritably at his collar. "Nothing," I repeated, disappointed.
nothing. How do you know? Asked little man, suspiciously. Mama said so. I asked her straight out this morning. Oh, replied little man, resigned. But something must have happened, I said. I mean, Uncle Hammer and Mr. Porson look like they haven't been to bed. How come they look like that nothing has happened? Mama said Mr. Morrison talked all night to Uncle Hammer, talked him tired, and would let him go up to the Simpsons. Ah, shoot, I explained. My dream of revenge against the Simpsons vanished as Stacy talked. I propped my elbows on my knees, then settled my head in his, in my upraised hands, and stared into the glowing embers. A burning knot formed in my throat, and I felt as if my body was not large enough to hold the frustration I felt, nor deep enough to drown the rising anger. It ain't fair, Christopher John sympathized, patting me lightly on his with his pudgy hand. Sure ain't, agreed little man. Cassie, Stacy said silently. At first I didn't look at him, thinking he would go ahead and say what he had to say. But when he didn't, I turned towards him. He leaned forward secretly and automatically. Christopher John and little man did the same. You all better be glad nothing happened, he said in a whisper, because I heard Big Ma tell Mama last night that if Mr. Morrison didn't stop Uncle Hammer, Uncle Hammer might get killed. Killed? We echoed as the fire sputtered and died. Who'd do it? I cried. Not one of those puny Mr. Simmses. Stacy stared at me, started to speak, but then Mama and Big Ma entered, and he cautioned us to be silent. Stacy looked down at his faded cotton jacket. Everyone else did too. The jacket was too small for him. That was obvious, and compared to little man's and Christopher John's and mine, it was admittedly in sadder shape. Yet we were all surprised that Uncle Hammer would ask about it, for he knew as well as anyone that Mama had to buy our clothes in shifts, which meant that we each had to wait our turn for new clothes. Stacy looked up at Mama, then back at Uncle Hammer. Yes, sir, he answered. Uncle Hammer stared at him, then waving his hand, ordered, take it off. Before Stacy could question why, Uncle Hammer disappeared into the boys' room. Again, Stacy looked at Mama. You better do like he says, she said. Uncle Hammer returned with a long box, store wrapped in shiny red Christmas paper and a fancy green ribbon. He handed the package to Stacy. It was supposed to be your Christmas present, but then I better give it to you now. It's cold out there. Gingerly, Stacy took the box and opened it. A coat, cried little man joyously, clapping his hands. Wool, Mama said reverently. Go ahead, Stacy. Try it on. Stacy eagerly slipped on the coat. It was much too big for him, but Mama said that she could take up the sleeves and that he could grow into it in another year. Stacy beamed down at the coat, then up at Uncle Hammer. A year ago, he would have shot into Uncle Hammer's arms and hugged his thanks. But now, at the manly age of 12, he held out his hand and Uncle Hammer shook it. Come on, we'd better go, said Mama. The morning was gray as we stepped outside, but the rain had stopped. We followed the path of bedded rocks that led to the barn, careful not to slip into the mud, and got into the Packard, shining clean and bright from the wash Uncle Hammer and Mr. Morrison had given it after breakfast. Inside the Packard, the world was wine-colored luxury. The boys and I in the back ran our hands over the rich felt seats, tenderly fingered the fancy door handles and window knobs, and peered down amazed at the plush carpet peeping out
on either side of the rubber mats. Mr. Morrison, who was not a church-going man, waved goodbye from the barn, and we sped away. As we drove onto the school grounds and parked, the people milling in front of the church turned, staring at the Packard. Then Uncle Hammer stepped from the car, and someone cried, "Well, I'll be doggone, it's our Hammer, Hammer Logan!" And in a body, the crowd engulfed us. TJ ran up with Moe Turner and little Willie Wiggins to admire the car. "It's Uncle Hammer's," said Stacy proudly. But before the boys could sufficiently admire the car, Mama and Big Ma shooed us towards the church for the service. It was then that TJ noticed Stacy's new coat. "Uncle Hammer gave it to him," I said. "Ain't it something?" TJ ran his long fingers over the lapels and shrugged. "It's all right, I guess, if you like that sort of thing." "All right," I cried indignantly at his casual reaction to the coat. "Boy, that's the finest coat you ever did lay your eyes on, and you know it." TJ sighed. "Like I said, it's all right, if you like looking like a fat preacher." Then he and little Willie and Moe laughed and went on ahead. Stacy looked down at the coat with its long sleeves and wide shoulders. His smile faded. "He don't know what he's talking about," I said. "He's just jealous, that's all." "I know it," snapped Stacy sourly. As we slid into the pew in front of TJ, TJ whispered, "Here comes the preacher," then leaned forward and said snidely, "How do you do, Reverend Logan?" Stacy turned on TJ, but I poked him arm. "Mama's looking," I whispered, and he turned back around. After church, as TJ and the others looked longingly at the car, Mama said, "Stacy, maybe TJ wants to ride." Before Stacy could reply, I spoke up hurriedly. "No, ma'am, Mama. He got something else he's got to do." Then under my breath, so that I would not be guilty of a lie, I added, "He's got to walk home like he always does." "That'll teach him," whispered little man. "Yeah," agreed Christopher John, but Stacy sulked by the window and said nothing. The sun was out now, and Uncle Hammer suggested that we take a real ride before going home. He drove us the full 22 miles up to Strawberry by way of the Jackson Road, one of two roads leading to the town. But Mama and Big Ma objected so much to going through Strawberry that he turned the big car around and headed back towards home, taking the old Soldiers' Road. Supposedly, rebel soldiers had once marched up the road and across Soldiers' Bridge to keep the town from falling into the hands of the Yankee army. But I had my doubts about that. After all, who in his right mind would want to capture Strawberry, or defend it either, for that matter? The road was hilly and curvy, and as we sped over it, scattered road stones hit sharply against a car's underbelly, and the dust swelled up rolls of billowing clouds behind us. Little man, Christopher John, and I shrieked with delight each time the car climbed a hill and dropped suddenly downward, fluttering our stomachs. Eventually, the road intersected with the Jefferson Davis School Road. Uncle Hammer stopped the car at the intersection and, leaning his right arm heavily over the steering wheel, motioned languidly at the Wallace store. "Got me good mind to burn that place out," he said. "Hammer, hush that kind of talk," ordered Big Ma, her eyes growing wide. "Me and John Henry and David grew up together. John Henry and me even fought in their war together. What good was it? A black man's life ain't worth the life of a cow fly down here." "I know that, son. But that kind of talk gets you hung, and you know it." Mama touched Uncle Hammer's arm. "There might be another way, Hammer. Like I told you, Now, don't go do something foolish. Wait for David. Talk to him.
Uncle Hammer looked glassy-eyed at the store, then sighed and eased the Packard across the road toward Soldiers Bridge. We were taking the long way home. Soldiers Bridge was built before the Civil War. It was spindly and wooden, and each time I had to cross it, I held my breath until I was safely on the other side. Only one vehicle could cross at a time, and whoever was on the bridge first was supposed to have the right-of-way, although it didn't always work that way. More than once, when I had been in the wagon with Mama and Big Ma, we had to have back off the bridge when a white family started across after we had already been on it. As the bridge came into view, the other side of the river was clearly visible, and it was obvious to everyone that an old Model T truck, overflowing with red-headed children, had reached the bridge first and was about to cross. But suddenly, Uncle Hammer gassed the Packard and sped onto the creaking structure. The driver of the truck stopped and, for no more than a second, hesitated on the bridge. Then, without a single honk of protest, backed off so that we could pass.
"Hammer!" Big Ma cried. "They think you're Mr. Granger."
"Well, now, won't they be surprised when we reach the other side?" said Uncle Hammer. As we came off the bridge, we could see the Wallaces, all of them, Dewberry, Thurston, and Caleb, touch their hats respectively, then immediately freeze as they saw who we were. Uncle Hammer, straight-faced and totally calm, touched the brim of his own hat in polite response, and without a backward glance sped away, leaving the Wallaces gaping silently after us. Stacy, Christopher John, Little Man, and I laughed, but Mama's cold glance made us stop.
"You shouldn't have done that, Hammer," she said quietly. "The opportunity, dear sister, was much too resist. But one day we'll have to pay for it. Believe me," she said. "One day we'll pay."
Chapter 7. "Stacy, go bring me your coat," Mama said a few days later as we gathered around the fire after supper. "I've got to take up the sleeves now. I've got time to do that."
"Uh-oh," exclaimed Christopher John. Then he immediately opened his reader as Mama looked down at him.
"Little Man," cupped his hand and whispered to me,
"boy, now he's going to get it."
"Oh, that's all right, Mama," stuttered Stacy. "The coat's all right, just like it is."
Mama opened her sewing box.
"It's not all right. Now, go get it for me." Stacy stood up and started slowly towards his room. Little Man, Christopher John, and I watched him closely, wondering what he was going to do. He actually went into the room, but was gone only a moment before he reappeared and nervously clutched the side of the back of his chair.
"I ain't got the coat, Mama," he said.
"Not got that coat," cried Big Ma. Uncle Hammer looked up shortly from his paper, but remained silent. "Stacy," Mama said irritably, "bring me that coat, boy."
"But, Mama, I really ain't got it. I gave it to TJ.
"TJ?" Mama explained.
"Yes, ma'am, Mama," Stacy answered, then went out on hurriedly as Mama's eyes glittered with rising anger. "The coat was much too big for me, and TJ said it made me look like a preacher. And he said since it fit him just right, he'd take it off my hands till I grow into it. Then that way all the guys would stop laughing at me and calling me preacher." He paused, waiting for someone to speak, but the only sound was a heavy breathing and the crackle of burning hickory. Then, seeming more afraid of the silence and putting his neck further into the noose, he added, "But I didn't give it to him for good, Mama. Just lent it to him till I get big enough for it." And then Stacy's voice faded into an inaudible whisper as Mama slowly put the sewing box on the table behind her. I thought she was headed for the wide leather strap hanging in the kitchen, but she did not rise. In quiet anger, she glared at Stacy and admonished, "In this house, we do not give away what loved ones give to us. Now go bring me that coat." Backing away from her anger, Stacy turned to leave, but Uncle Hammer stopped him. "No," he said, "leave the coat where it is." Mama turned bewildered towards Uncle Hammer. "Hammer, what are you saying? That's the best coat Stacy's ever had and probably ever will have, as long as he lives in this house. David and I can't afford a coat like that." Uncle Hammer leaned back in his chair, his eyes cold on Stacy. "Seems to me if Stacy's not smart enough to hold on to a good coat, he don't deserve it. As far as I'm concerned, TJ can just keep that coat permanently. At least he knows a good thing when he sees it." "Hammer," Big Ma said, "let the boy go get the coat. That TJ probably done told him all sort. Well, ain't Stacy got a brain? What the devil should he care what TJ thinks of or what TJ says? Who is this TJ anyway? Does he put clothes on Stacy's back and food in front of him?" Uncle Hammer stood and walked over to Stacy. His little man, Christopher, John, and I followed him fearfully with our eyes. "I suppose if TJ told you it was summertime out there and you should run buck naked down the road because everybody else was doing it, you'd do that too, huh?" "No, sir," Stacy replied, looking at the floor. "Now you hear me good on this. Look at me when I talk to you, boy." Immediately, Stacy raised his head and looked at Uncle Hammer. "If you ain't got the brains of a flea to see that this TJ fellow made a fool of you, then you'll never get anywhere in this world. It's tough out there, boy. And as long as there are people, there's going to be somebody trying to take what you got and trying to drag you down. It's up to you whether you let them or not. Now, it seems to me you wanted that coat when I gave it to you. Ain't that right?" Stacy managed a shaky, "Yes, sir." "And anybody with any sense would know it's a good thing. Ain't that right?" This time, Stacy could not only nod. "Then if you want something, and it's a good thing, and you got it in the right way, you better hang on to it and don't let nobody talk you out of it. You care what a lot of useless people say about you, you'll never get anywhere, because there's a lot of folks don't want you to make it. You understand what I'm telling you?" "Yes, sir, Uncle Hammer," Stacy stammered. Uncle Hammer turned then and went back into his paper without having laid a hand on Stacy, but Stacy shook visibly from the encounter. Christopher, John, Little Man, and I exchanged apprehensive glances. I don't know what they were thinking, but I, for one, was deciding right then and there not to do anything to rub Uncle Hammer the wrong way. I had no intentions of ever facing a tongue-lashing like that. Papa's bottom-warming whippings were good enough for me. Thank you. The last day of school before Christmas seemed interminable. Each night I fell asleep with the hope that the morning would bring Papa, and each morning when he wasn't there I trudged to school, consoling myself that he would be home when I returned. But the day passed prickly cold and windy, and he did not come. Added to the misery of the waiting and the cold was Lillian Jean, who managed to flounce past me with a superior smirk twice that week. I had already decided that she had two flounces too many, but since I hadn't yet decided how to handle the matter, I postponed doing anything until after I had a chance to talk with Papa about the whole strawberry business. I knew perfectly well that he would not tear out of the house after Mr. Sims, as Uncle Hammer had done, for he always took time to think through any move he made, but he would certainly advise me on how to handle Lillian Jean. Well, with that line, we bring this hour to a close. It's always a pleasure to be with you each Saturday afternoon. This has been Mark Wiesner, and I wish you a great week ahead. Bye-bye. Take care.